Greetings and welcome back to another session of our Game of the Year 2023 podcast. Last time we left off, we had just gotten through the crappier games of the year, plus our mid-range games of the year, and now we're moving into, with the exception of RE4, I believe. So now we're getting into our top favorites of the year. And I'll let you gentlemen go first, since I only have a couple, and they're probably going to end up on your list too, so...
Well, I actually forgot about a couple of smaller games that came out last year. Well, I mean, there were two games that I kind of lumping in together. The Metroid Prime Remaster came out last year. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I like that.
And the Advance Wars games from the Game Boy Advance, they got remade. And I thought that was pretty cool, too. It's not
my cup of tea. I tried playing that for like a few hours. And it wasn't really my kind of thing, but I bought it at least.
Yeah, it's never really been my favorite thing either. A few years ago, they made a Wargroove.
Yeah.
And I think that's a cool game. It's like Advanced Wars, but like in a high fantasy kind of setting. I just can't, the gameplay is just not for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've tried. And I think I have a lot of respect for the series. I think it's really cool that it came back. And I hope Nintendo takes notes. You know, just saying, there's another duology of GBA RPGs that deserve to be remade. Just saying. You know, the fact that it exists is pretty cool.
And Klonoa games?
Those already got
remade. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I'm talking about the GBA ones. He said GBA duology.
Yeah, we don't need that.
Yeah, just give me what I want. Or don't. I don't even care anymore. I'm fine.
I would be content if they never did anything with Klonoa again. I'm okay with it.
I mean, do you guys have anything to say about that Metroid Prime remaster?
I really enjoyed it. I mean, Metroid Prime 1, it's not my favorite Metroid game, but I mean, hey, it looked really nice.
Oh my god, yeah.
Yeah.
It felt weird to control it with the dual sticks.
Yeah, I guess, speaking of which, I bought a copy, but I have not played it yet. Because originally I was going to try to do a Metroid Prime trilogy type thingamadoodle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, there's some kind of issue with the... I remember now. Like, my OBS scene for my GameCube footage got fucked up, so it looked like it was 240p, even though it was 480p. So I would have had to re-record the whole fucking thing. Yeah. So I didn't get to the remake or the Switch version for that reason. So I was curious about what, besides the graphics, did they really improve? Because I know there was a gyro aiming option with the Joy-Cons.
Yeah. It's pretty much like they didn't really change much of anything except the graphics. And I think, you know, obviously they add gyro aiming and stuff. They kind of just were like, yeah, we're just going to visually update it. They didn't really change anything else.
Different control options, too.
Yeah, I guess they do have that as well.
Yeah, I think they even left in the original control layout where it's like you have to like press a button to like actually aim.
Yeah, it's the Star Fox Assault control scheme.
Yeah, I mean, like it worked for the time, you know.
And obviously it is a good idea if you're going to re-release this game to add a modern dual stick control scheme so people... It can be more accessible. I'd like to see that for the Mega Man Legends games, Capcom.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, that'd be pretty
if they ever
cool.
get around to that.
You know what I want? Is for them not to just ignore Prime 2 and 3.
Yeah.
Which it seems like they are doing. I mean, I'll hold my breath, I guess. But if we don't get 2 and 3, I'll be a little upset.
I think we'll probably get 2. I don't know about 3.
In my opinion, they should just do all of them. Because we're leading up to Prime 4 anyway. And it just seems like, I don't know. It seems weird to do 1 and then not do 2 and 3. I would understand why, because 1's the popular one, I guess. But I don't know.
Yeah.
It would just frustrate the hell out of me.
Also, the most generic one.
Well, that's part of, like, I try to keep myself in line a little bit. But that is part of the reason where I'm like, really? And everybody lost their shit over Prime 1 Remake. And I'm like, yeah, but like, could we get it for 2 and 3 also, please? Thank you.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, folks. Prime 1 is a solid, well-constructed game. It's good. I've played it as many times as I have for a reason. But I don't know. It just feels... It kind of reminds me of Ocarina of Time, where Ocarina of Time is basically 3D Link to the Past, right down to the story. Prime is kind of that for Super Metroid.
Yeah.
The plots of the other two games are more interesting. But regardless, one point I did want to bring up is if there was one quality of life addition I would want in a Metroid Prime remake, it would be for them to put the item marking feature from Prime 3 in to help you keep track of collectibles.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently they didn't do that.
No, yeah, I don't think they really added anything other than control options.
And I also heard that the ice shriek bat is still missable.
I don't know about that. I wouldn't be surprised, because it pretty much just kind of seems like they took the original and they were just like, yeah, we'll just change the visuals.
Yeah.
Well, they probably worked off the Wii remake, but...
It just seems a tad disappointing that they didn't really... It's like the Spyro 2 remake, Reignited Trilogy, where it's like, yeah, we updated the graphics in the presentation, but we didn't address any of the design issues with the game at all. We just, it's a, what's TGX would call a warts and all remake.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like that's what the Metroid Prime remake is to some extent, even though, you know, like the game doesn't really have that many flaws or quality of life additions to make. You know, it's a solid, well-constructed game, like I said, but it's like...
Yeah, I don't really know, because all my problems with Prime 1 are its map design, and they're not going to change that.
Yeah, you can't fix that short of a reimagining. I don't know, if you could take time to remodel all the graphics, you couldn't take the time to put some dots on the map?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's one of the most annoying things about the first two Prime games, is that they don't track items like the 2D ones do. And then 3 has it, but you have to go out of your way to unlock it. So it's like, why not just put that in there? How hard can it be? That's my major nitpick for this game I have not played. your other catch-up game, Mr. Ryan?
Oh, no, that it was just that in Advance Wars.
Okay.
I just thought that the fact that these existed and that they were released this year, I thought that was pretty cool. But if I remember correctly, I think you said that you wanted to do Metroid Prime for the Unverse cast at some point, no?
Yeah, playthrough. I was going to do the Wii version. We could still do that.
Would you want to do the Switch port? Because I'm down.
Yeah, we could do that. I'm all for it.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
But it is interesting, King, that you mentioned Prime 4, because we're all well aware of the development problems that game has had. It was like originally announced, I want to say in like
2017, I think.
Okay, so like around the same time as Samus Returns was revealed, probably.
Yeah, and then it restarted in 2019, I think.
Yeah, it was originally going to be a Bandai Namco game, and then they couldn't make it work, so they gave it to Retro. And speaking of which, this Prime remake is the first game they've made in 9 years,
mm-hmm.
which is suspicious. What the hell's been going on over there? Because they were one of the most celebrated and well-reviewed developers for Nintendo in the GameCube and Wii days, and then they just skipped the Wii U, and it took until just now for them to make a new game. So I wonder what the hell's happening behind closed doors over there.
Who knows?
I've heard rumors that they were making like a Star Fox racing game or something, or some kind of crossover.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are ancient.
Yeah. I remember there was this thing a while ago. I think this was like right when the Wii was even announced. It was like a Metroid X Star Fox game.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I was thinking of, yeah.
Well, yeah, no. There was a Star Fox Grand Prix.
Okay, right? So these were two separate projects.
Right? Yeah, okay. These were two separate things. And I remember, again, like there was like this rumor for a while that there was like a Metroid Star Fox crossover.
Yeah.
But that never happened.
But I guess my real question is, how much longer does it have to be until we can officially consider Metroid Prime 4 the new Duke Nukem Forever?
Well, I don't know, because what if you consider what Miyamoto said about Pikmin 4 to be true?
That it was ready all the way back in like 2016 or something?
Yeah.
I mean, it does explain why the game is so good and polished. There are some interesting parallels between the development of Duke Nukem Forever and Metroid Prime 4. Like, it was revealed early on before it was ready. It swapped developers at least once. There might be an engine swap involved as well. You know, it's only been like, I guess, 6 or 7 years, but it does feel like we should have seen something of this game by now, like even another teaser, but it's just... We've still seen nothing, and they rebooted it like several years ago.
Like, if the Switch 2 is happening this year, Prime 4 would probably be a launch title for it. Maybe that's why they've never shown it.
Because
if they want that's it to be a launch title, then they're not going to show it before the Switch 2 even comes out.
Yeah, it just seemed like after the Federation Force controversy, where everybody was downvoting the Direct, that feels like ancient history now, but that was almost 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like they were so desperate to do damage control that they revealed this thing way before they should have.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they got to get that good faith back in.
Yeah. I mean, they made Dread. That was really good.
Mm-hmm.
They were able to make Metroid Dread in the time it took them to not finish Metroid Prime 4. That's just kind of funny. What's the next game, folks?
Well, if we're padding, I played Super Mario RPG. I guess I could talk about that.
Okay. Yeah.
Another remake I bought but did not play last year.
I thought that it was... This makes me sound like I hate it, because my caveat is I really liked it and enjoyed it, but I also enjoyed it less than Superstar Saga, Partners in Time, Bowser's Inside Story, Paper Mario, Thousand Year Door, and Super Paper Mario. But, you know, I like
it.
So, speaking of Super Paper Mario, like, apparently there is a movement of people, I can't remember what they're called, that literally just skulk around Reddit boards and complain about Super Paper Mario all day.
That does not surprise me. The Paper Mario discourse is interesting.
But it surprises me because, like, I mean, obviously it's not an RPG. It's like a action RPG side-scroller thing. But I've always thought that game was pretty good. So I don't know where all the motivation to create a hate Reddit would come from.
Because it's not the thing that I like.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, if you want to be, I guess for these people, it was probably like the beginning of the end. Because it changed from Thousand Year Door. I don't know. I don't like Paper Mario discourse very much, if I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, sir.
But Super Mario RPG, so I have not played the original. I usually don't do this, but I was like, whatever. I'm just going to play the remake because I'm too lazy to play the original. So I can't really speak on what the remake is like as a remake. I can only really speak on what it was like to play, which, you know, it was fun. I guess I don't really know what I expected going into Super Mario RPG.
I know exactly what GIF I'm going to edit in.
It's like a more Final Fantasy-esque Mario RPG, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Which is cool. It gives it a different flavor than the games that came after. But you can tell that it's the progenitor of them, too. And that Paper Mario and Superstar Saga both went in their own interesting directions. And they both kind of play off things that were in Mario RPG. It's like they both took a focus and just ran with that focus.
Yeah.
And they both became better games series for it, at least in the beginning. So, I don't know. So I look at Mario RPG, having played all these games, and I'm like, yeah, you know, it's cute and fun. There's some cool gags in there. It's like a more lighthearted thing, as a Mario RPG is often do. It's more in this, I guess... I got more of like the Mario and Luigi silliness from it. I don't know. Part of the reason I didn't even talk about it the last time we recorded is because I don't think I have any hot takes regarding it other than it's a little bit underwhelming, I guess, after all the hype surrounding it for years.
I want to say the Boundary Break guy was tweeting about how, like, if you've never played Super Mario RPG before, your life is about to be changed. And then he got dogpiled.
Yeah.
which sucks and for him.
I'm glad some people like it so much, but I don't know, man. It was like, I think the remake added some super bosses that were pretty cool, which is basically they just took every major boss and did a remix on it to make it much harder. There's one that actually pissed me the fuck off because it does not explain at all to you how it works. Do you remember Punchinello? Do you remember that boss?
Yes.
The one with the bombs, I think.
Yeah, the bomb man who gets crushed by the giant bomb.
There's a super boss variant where you have to hit the bombs so that they turn around and hit him. And he puts three bombs out at a time. And these bombs will basically one-shot you. But the only way to turn them around is to perfect time your hit, which I wasn't aware was different from a normal timed hit at all. Because there's not a lot of good feedback or information telling you that this is a feature that exists, nor do you ever need to use it at any point. So suddenly you're in this one super boss, which is, I think, the only one that ever requires that you perfect time your hits. Because if you don't perfect time your hit, you will just hit the bomb, it will activate and not turn around and come over and fuck you up.
Oh.
So you have to hit every single bomb perfect attack to kill Punchinello, because he can't do damage to Punchinello, really. And it was absolutely horrible. I hated that fight. But the rest of the super bosses are all really fun. So I guess I enjoyed the combat system well enough, especially in like the post game, quote unquote.
Yeah.
I thought the music was really good. It looks nice. I like the style they go with for the remake. And the final area, the like weapon world or whatever, was like pretty cool. I didn't expect that.
Yeah.
It was a cool final area. I like Culex, or what's his name? Is his name Culex? I don't fucking
Culex
remember.
Culex is the guy at Monster Town. Smithy is the guy you fight in the weapons factory.
Yes, that's his name. But I also felt like, you know, the minigames all were absolutely horrendous.
And by minigames, do you mean like the Midas River?
Yes.
Okay.
And the minecart thing and the Yoshi race. They all were horrible. I don't know if this is a thing in the original or if this is a remake thing.
Those minigames were in the original. If they changed them, I wouldn't know because I haven't played it yet.
Yeah.
But to my recollection, they were all fine.
No, I hated them, especially the minecart one. I don't know, man. It just felt, when I compare it to like the stuff in the Mario and Luigi games, which I feel like just handled them much better. There were some weird controls for these ones. The river minigame felt like it was so slow that I felt like a fucking snail. I don't know, man. I did not like those minigames. But that's like more of a nitpick because they don't really take up much of your time. But I guess that's the other problem is that the game is, and don't get me wrong, I like that the Mario RPGs are short, but
yeah,
Super Mario RPG feels like it doesn't really build to anything and it just kind of ends abruptly.
Yes. There's another game we're going to be talking about later that I think has that problem, but a lot of people rag on Paper Mario 1's story for just being a Bowser versus Mario thing.
Yeah.
Which it is, but I would argue it's the definitive Bowser versus Mario story because Bowser actually has a concrete motivation. We see a lot of him, you know, we get to see him and Peach rag off of each other, whereas Smithy doesn't really do much of anything. And then he shows up at the end and you fight him. And then that's kind of it.
Yeah. It's just, and it makes the whole thing feel like a series of vignettes, I guess, which is fine. But I don't know. It just wasn't.
That's pretty much what Superstar Saga was.
Yeah, kind of. And that one is my least favorite of the three Mario RPGs that I like a lot.
And even then, Cacoletta is a more interesting villain than Smithy was.
Yeah.
And it has Fawful. And that game is so wacky that it's a lot funnier.
Yeah, I mean, that Mario RPG was funny at points, but it, you know, I don't know. It was just mostly like, I wouldn't even say it was boring. It was just kind of underwhelming. But it was fun, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, and I almost kind of wish I had played it, because I have played through the original multiple times, but that's also kind of the reason I didn't play it, even though I was kind of curious about it. Like, originally, I bought the game so I could give it to my brother for Christmas.
Yeah.
But it turns out that he'd already bought it for himself, so it's like, oh, I guess I've got this game lying around, might as well keep it. But at the same time, it's like, I think the Super Nintendo version was perfectly good as it was.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's just me, but the Switch graphics, there is something about those Super Nintendo games with pre-rendered graphics, CGI graphics, that I think just looks better in low res. Something about that art style.
Yeah.
I think the DKC games would look worse if they were higher res, if that makes sense.
Yeah, probably.
And when you take that and remake it very literally, as it seems like they did in the Switch version, it just kind of looks not as good, in my opinion, having only seen the trailers, mind you. Maybe if I play through the whole game, I'll change my mind, but it did look kind of weird. I wasn't super impressed with any of the remixes I heard. Apparently the original soundtrack is still in there, so
yeah, it is.
Kudos for that. But it also just seemed like a kind of game that didn't really need to be remade.
Yeah, probably not. I don't know.
And I mean, like, Resident Evil 4 proves that you can remake a game that's already good and make it interesting, do something with it. But that didn't seem like the kind of game that this was. It seemed like a straightforward, here's the same exact game again with new graphics. And apparently they added some kind of three-hit combo thing to the combat system that wasn't in the original.
I don't know that I noticed that.
It was like you could hit people multiple times with one attack or something. I don't know. I'll look this up.
There's like the infinite jump attack that Mario has. I don't know if you're talking about that.
Okay.
Wasn't that in the original?
That is, yes. The super jump or ultra jump. Yeah, I don't know. It just seemed like they could have just put the original on Switch Online. And
I thought the original was on Switch Online.
It isn't. I thought it was too, but either they took it off at some point or it was never there to begin with. Cause I checked. Cause like when everybody was like, they can't remake Paper Mario 1 cause it's on NSO. I'm just like, well, what about Super Mario RPG? That's on NSO. And then I looked it up and it wasn't.
Hmm.
So But that just proves that if they really wanted to remake Paper Mario 1, they could have just not put it on NSO.
Yeah.
That is kind of my problem. I know everybody loves Thousand Year Door, and I'm glad that that formula is coming back. But, you know, they could just put GameCube games on NSO.
Part of my problem with Paper Mario Discourse, if I can get a little bit heated, is that I feel like if they had remade Paper Mario 1, which I would have preferred to Thousand Year Door personally, everybody would be just as excited, because the only reason people are excited is because the old format's coming back.
Yes.
And it just so happens to be that it's Thousand Year Door, which, to be fair, is the one that most people seem to prefer anyway. But I think the problem I have is that it's like this, it just kind of feels like a movement more than like, oh yeah, Thousand Year Door is coming back. It's more like, oh yeah, Nintendo finally gave up and they're going to acquiesce to our demands. You know, it's a little bit like, I don't know.
I want to say I saw a tweet the other day. You know that meme where a guy is posing and taking a selfie next to a tombstone?
Yeah. That's very Alan from The Flash.
Someone made a meme where it's like a tombstone for Sticker Star, Color Splash, and Origami King. And then like characters from Thousand Year Door posing in front of the tombstone.
Yeah, it's so funny to see that meme everywhere, because that meme is really old. I think that picture was taken in like 2015 or 16 or something. Like, but then recently it's like this ever-present, like evergreen meme, even though that when I originally saw it was just a silly picture promoting like Arrow season 5 or something. It's very funny that this is like a thing that's just become a general meme.
I guess my point is, I think Paper Mario 64 would benefit the most from being remade. It's like,
yeah, that's why I would rather they have remade 64, less because of that. I mean, that's probably true. I haven't played these two games in a long time, so I don't know.
Yeah.
For me, it's just like, it feels like the only reason they're doing Thousand Year Door is because they only want to do one of them, and that's the most popular one.
Yeah.
Whereas it just make more sense to me to start with the original.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to do Thousand Year Door after, you could. But now it kind of feels like they can't do the original because they've already done Thousand Year Door, or at least that they're signaling that they're not going to do the original.
I mean, that's what happened with Partners in Time. They just skipped it.
Yeah.
And now Alpha Dream's dead, so it's never going to get remade.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's disappointing for me because it's just like, okay, we can remake Super Mario RPG, which didn't need a remake, and we're going to do an graphical update on Thousand Year Door, which already looks fine.
Yeah.
And now this other game that actually would benefit from having new graphics is just going to get left by the wayside. And that's just it.
Yep.
I don't know. Disappointing, in my opinion. But what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean,
boycott.
But definitely do not say it. I remember I tweeted out that I didn't really feel anything towards the Thousand Year Door remake, and people were very upset with me. So don't talk about that. I mean, we already have talked about that, but you got to be wary. But that's part of the reason I'm a little bit, I don't know. I just think people are into the movement more than they're into the game.
Yeah.
Well, and I can get a little dangerous if you don't keep that shit in check. Oh, well, I'll just avoid Paper Mario Discourse like I have been and just move on with my life.
I'll leave with this. I thought Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door was pretty boring.
Oh, well, damn. That's
well, at least the angry comments are going to go after me this time.
Fuck them. People don't like when I say Mario 64 hasn't aged well, and they're not going to like when I say Thousand Year Door was boring. Fuck it.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, no, it's probably nobody's going to be surprised when you say that, right?
Yeah. The infamous Mario hater of the three of us.
And I'm really not.
The infamous Panera Bread hater.
Yeah. Speaking of Panera Bread, I'm drinking a lovely charged melonade right now.
I'm drinking some unfermented yeast right now.
Okay.
Man, I just got water. Also, we have a tornado warning, so I might die tonight. That's cool.
Well, shit.
Yeah.
So it won't be the Mario fans that kill you. It'll be this tornado.
Yeah.
No, it'll be God
jokes
himself.
On you, BobombGuy62.
We have a winter storm warning right now, but all it means is that we have light rain because Michigan can't decide if it wants to snow. It already didn't fucking snow during Christmas, even though it was Christmas.
Have you guys ever heard, did you guys know that Joe Pesci had a rap career?
Who's Joe Pesci again?
You know the short guy from Home Alone, one of the two crooks?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and he was also in a wonderful movie called My Cousin Vinny, where he plays a bumbling New York lawyer who gets...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I know what that one is. I've seen that before.
So he had a rap career, and he had a song called If It Doesn't Snow on Christmas. It's on Eric's cancer playlist. Cancer Christmas playlist.
Okay.
It's worth checking out. It's funny. We just randomly heard it on the radio one day while we were driving, and Eric's like, wait, is that Joe Pesci? And then he immediately put it on the cancer playlist.
That's funny.
It's pretty good.
The following contains endgame spoilers for Xenoblade Chronicles 1, 2, and 3. Viewer discretion is advised.
I guess it's my turn now.
Yeah.
Like I said, I don't have any other 2023 games, but I did want us to talk a little bit about a certain trilogy I played this year.
Golden Sun?
I guess that's a trilogy, technically, but that's not the one.
What do you mean, technically? It is. There's three games.
Well, the first two games are technically two halves of a first game, but there are three games, yes. But that's not the trilogy I was talking about, Ryan.
Okay.
He's talking about the Kung Fu Panda trilogy.
Yes, the second one's the best.
Yeah, they're making a fourth one.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I guess that's not a trilogy anymore.
Yeah.
Apparently, the plan is to make six films.
Hmm.
Is the third one good?
I liked it. I like all the Kung Fu Panda movies. I think two is probably my favorite one, but yeah. I think three was good.
I've only ever seen the first one.
Definitely see the second one. It's really good.
What about the third one, Michael?
Famously, it didn't do well at the box office because it came out the same day as another two, Hangover 2.
Hangover 2.
Which was a movie everybody regretted seeing when it came out. But regardless, I played the Xenoblade Chronicles trilogy, which is conveniently all available on the Nintendo Switch.
Did you play the expansion Future?
I did not play the expansions, any of them.
No.
You know, I played Future Redeemed this year.
That's what Redeemed.
You know what? This is good. This is prescient and current because Future Redeemed came out this year. So I can talk about that as well.
I feel terrible. I haven't played it.
Well, why the fuck are you here right now? Go play the fuck.
Permission to leave, Exo?
I say as I put Future Redeemed in like my lower, because it's not like a real game.
Oh, damn.
I mean, it's basically DLC.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, I played the base games for these three games. So I guess lightning round for those. I thought the first one was boring. The story took forever to get interesting. Like, it seems like once you get to Juju's Bizarre Adventure, which goes on for like a couple of hours, all the way from there until maybe the Galahad Fortress. No. I actually like the stuff in the, what the fuck are those angel people called again?
Hyentia.
Yeah, the Hyentia. When you get to the Hyentia Imperial City, like, I thought that stuff was kind of interesting. That's when it kind of finally picked up. bless you. Because it felt like there was something happening, but a lot of the game just felt really dull, because you spend, like, the first act, nothing happens. Then you get to the second act where you're, or the bulk of the second act where you're just fighting Mechon over and over, like the same six Mechon archetypes over and over and over for like 20 hours. And then there's the final act where you go after the true big bad, who is a total hottie, and I'm not ashamed to say that.
Zanza?
Yes. I mean, he's gorgeous. I mean, look at him.
That's interesting.
Zanza the Divine.
I don't know. I thought
that booty divine.
The one common criticism I have for all three Xenoblade games is that.
But hold on. How do you feel about Alvis?
Who? What?
You don't know who Alvis is?
Okay, oh, I thought you said Alglass.
No, Alvis.
Yes, Alvis.
Is he hot?
Yes.
Okay.
I have a thing for anime boys with white hair.
Just, I had a feeling. If you like fucking Zanza, you probably, yeah.
I mean, Zanza has those beautiful golden locks and those pretty eyes.
So if Shulk had longer hair,
well, Shulk is also hot, and I can make him take his shirt off. So then you better believe I played a good chunk of the game with that.
It
without
is
him
funny
wearing a
when
shirt.
You get to the forest, to Magma Forest. I take everybody's shirts off because they're like, you know, it's the vacation arc.
Yeah,
let's go. You hang out with the Nappon.
Why do the Nappon? Okay, have you guys ever seen Johnny Bravo?
Ages ago, yeah.
Like a few episodes. Nothing.
Do you remember what he sounds like? He's like, oh, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why do the Nappon sound like that actor doing an impression of Rabbit from Winnie the Pooh?
That is a thing that you just said. You just said that.
Is that how you feel about Ricky? That he's Johnny Bravo, but with...
No, he sounds a little like there's literally a guy you meet when you enter the village who's like, "Welcome back, bird lady." And he sounds like Jeff Bennett doing a rabbit impression. I don't know. Like, I thought...
Give me your review of every party member.
Like, in terms of usefulness? Like, what on what terms?
And then not a hot scale. This time we're actual character scale. Let's go.
I mean, like, the problem is that they at max, the characters only have, like, 9 moves. And you don't have, like, a traditional...
I mean, they're characters, not their gameplay use.
Oh, their personalities. Okay.
Yes.
Dunban's like the team dad. I kind of liked him for that. He's kind of like the slightly older character who's sort of like a mentor figure.
Yes.
Fiora is kind of dull. And I knew that she was going to come back immediately because like, why the hell did they bother?
I don't like Fiora, actually.
Also, some fucking asshole on Twitter posted the goddamn Japanese commercial for Xenoblade 1 while I was in the middle of playing it. And they literally show Mechon Fiora in that. So it's like, okay.
Mecha Fiora has been spoiled for ages, even by Smash Brothers.
Yeah, I was about to say, we actually know somebody who had Mecha Fiora spoiled because of Smash Ultimate. Can I share a story regarding Smash Ultimate and a spoiler I had with Xenoblade Chronicles 1?
Okay.
That is a very specific story, but sure.
It won't take long. There's a Mumkar spirit in Smash Ultimate.
I forgot about that.
And then I leveled him up to 99. And when you level up some spirits to level 99, they'll evolve, essentially. And then I saw that he evolved into Metal Face. I'm like, oh, no! I had that spoiled for me.
Yeah.
That's funny.
I don't know, like, Ricky exists.
Yeah, he certainly does.
He wasn't as annoying as I thought he was going to be.
I'll take it. You know what? I'll take it.
Ryan is kind of like... a lovable, dumb guy. Ryan.
Hey.
We're talking about Ryan?
Oh, by the way, I turned off the fucking battle dialogue almost immediately.
Oh, you're one of those. I can't associate with you anymore.
And then I got to Xenoblade 3, and you couldn't do that anymore, and I was really annoyed with that.
Yeah, for good reason.
Let's see. Ryan's the lovable dumb guy. They don't lay that on too thick, which I appreciated. Like, he's more of a hit first, ask questions later kind of guy. That's just kind of what he's good at, and he knows it.
Yes.
Let's see. Who Sharla exists. The whole
she certainly does.
That whole thing
she's
with
hot,
her.
Though.
Yeah, sure. Her whole thing with her
brother,
fiance,
Juju,
fiance Gatto.
Oh.
I thought you said Beyonce.
You know, my favorite part was when you go into the Bay Hive and you fight Beyonce.
you mean Lorethea?
Yeah, that was the creepy part. Bitch.
How did you feel about fighting Lorethea?
That boss fucking blows, man.
Yeah, everybody hates Lorethea.
Because most of the game, I went out of my way to fight every enemy I saw. For the most part, that's just how I play RPGs, because it's like, if I go out of my way to fight everything and I'm still not leveled up enough for the boss, then you fucked up your balance somewhere. Yeah. Then I can safely call it the game's fault. But at that point in the game, it had been going on for like 80 hours, and I just kind of wanted to get it over with. And the enemies in that area where you fight Lorethea are really tanky and easy to die to. So I ran past some of them. Then I got to this boss and it's just, what does she do again? She uses like some kind of status ailment or something, or she can explode her little minions. I can't remember exactly, but it was like, okay, I guess we're doing this now. So then I had to go back to what is it called? The plains next to Colony 14 or whatever it's called.
Colony 6.
They're like these gorilla enemies, and I had to like grind the, they were like a higher level enemy you're supposed to skip the first time through, and I had to grind them for like 2 hours to get
my
stats up.
You know, one thing
up.
About Xenoblade 1 that I've always thought is that there are mechanics in it that honestly don't need to exist, like purging and shit. I just don't feel like it needs to be there. And a lot of that, because there are auras that enemies can have that you can purge, it makes it really confusing for a first-time player. I was really confused when I first played, because some enemies, like the Telethia, which you were just talking about, if you don't purge them, they're going to do a lot more damage to you. Some of them have like spike auras, or they read, like, you can't hit them because they read your mind. So it's cool from like a lore aspect, but it's just, I think it's completely unnecessary. And I will always contend that one has the weakest gameplay of all three. Easy.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what I was trying to say, was like, my common criticism of all three games is that I don't like, I think the later games are more satisfying to play, definitely. But like, I did not feel like there was a lot of strategy to this combat.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like most of the satisfaction comes from the pretty animations, and specifically like the chain attack stuff in three was really flashy and fun when that
chain
music starts playing.
In one are RNG based, so it's kind of hard to be strategic with them. Even though it is fun to get like a huge chain. But in two and three, there's a lot of... Two, I think, is harder to get into because there's a million blades you can get.
Yes.
And they don't explain things very well. But once you do get past that hump, I think that the stuff you can do in chain attacks, if you set them up properly, you can essentially break the game if you know what you're doing. You can do the same thing in three, but I think it's just better handled. And those two things are things that one has technically, but it's just not nearly as satisfying.
And I liked the second and third games more specifically because I thought their stories were way better executed.
Mm-hmm.
And now two has some issues that we can maybe touch on in a bit. But
well, that's an understatement.
Like, the first game is a treatise on fate and destiny and revenge and what it does to you, humanity, how one defines it. Those are just some of the themes that are in the game. I thought the revenge plot was handled poorly. I did not like the resolution to the metal face subplot at all. It felt like it came right the flying fuck out of nowhere.
Now you're losing me.
Because I think Mumkar is a giant asshole, and regardless of whether he's technically a Homs or not, considering all the horrible shit he's done and the fact that he's in complete control of his faculties and isn't being controlled by Eggle at all, he's just kind of doing his own thing, I think it's pretty reasonable to want to kill him.
I mean, I don't know. I guess as a human being, I might agree. But I also agree with the point that pursuing that kind of revenge is not necessarily healthy either.
No, but considering that he attacked them first, and they were acting in self-defense at that point. Because at that point, they were just trying to stop the Galahad Fortress.
The drive to kill was also there. And that does not come from a healthy place. I think that was more the point of that scene.
But it's like they already had him on his last ropes anyway. They didn't even bother to destroy his suit. They just left him. And then the game's like, oh, but because Mumkar couldn't let it go, he gets himself killed. So it comes full circle. And I'm like, I get what you're trying to say, game, but I don't agree with it at all.
I mean, like, that part of it, for me, the part where it comes full circle, quote-unquote, is when Shulk and Eggle reconcile.
Mm-hmm. Which I didn't like either, he's a genocidal madman, and I think at some point there are things that can't be forgiven. But then the game's like, oh, but because they forgave Eggle, he used the Mechanus to distract Zanza long enough for them to get away. So it was good that he forgave him, actually. And I'm like, I see what you're doing, game, but I don't agree with it.
I guess the problem is that the two sides of the war are set up from the very beginning to both have the exact same motivations towards each other, which makes it hard for me to place blame on either side, really. I think that's the whole part of the revenge plot that makes it interesting, is that at some point, both of these sides are acting in much the same way because of a thing that got set up like years and years ago.
Yeah. I mean, obviously what Zanza did to what the hell are they called? Machina? It was terrible. Eggle's motivation makes complete sense. I totally get it. And there's an intentional parallel between him wanting to get revenge on Zanza with Shulk wanting to get revenge on Metal Face for supposedly killing Fiora. I get what
they're
trying to do.
That's actually the biggest problem with the story for me, is that Fiora comes back, because I don't think Shulk should have gotten that get out of jail card. Because the problem with Fiora coming back is that when Shulk reconciles with Eggle, and I don't think this is a major problem I have with the story, but it is a problem I have with Fiora coming back, is that now Shulk has even less reason to be mad at Eggle.
Yes.
Because basically his only reasons are secondhand with his friends losing people.
It would be a more satisfying story about overcoming the hatred driving revenge if the thing that made him hate the other people in the first place wasn't undone.
Yes. But at the same time, I also think what it does is very effective, and I've always thought that. However, I do think that a lot of the same things that they try to do in one, they also do in three, which I just prefer three wholesale to all the games.
Sure, so. Yes. The one last thing I wanted to mention about one, and you probably won't know where I'm going with this, King, but Ryan will. I played a game recently called Tales of Berseria. I guess it was a couple years ago at this point.
Yes.
But I feel like Tales of Berseria has many similar themes to Xenoblade 1, to the point where I would say it was probably inspired by Xenoblade 1. But
I mean, the main antagonist kind of looks a bit like Zanza, a little bit. Kind
yes,
of.
I was going to say, like, at the end, you fight a blonde god.
Yeah.
Who is wearing white Arturus! Angelic clothing. And the game is focused around a theme of revenge and gods manipulating people. And, like, I haven't had time to foment this hot take to its fullest extent and ruminate on all the details. I'm not going to say they're, like, the same thing, but I do think that the way that Tales of Berseria handles the revenge plot is more satisfying than Xenoblade 1, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just feel like Velvet is a more interesting character than Shulk, for one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it helps that Velvet isn't... I mean, she starts off as a good person, but at the end of the game, she's kind of... Well, I mean, not even at the end of the game, but like for the majority of the game, she's just like, I don't really care about morality. I just want to kill this man who took everything yeah. from me. And I think having someone without that kind of moral compass, you know, that's... not really something that's been done a whole lot,
yes.
you know, especially in the JRPG space, because usually you want the goody two-shoe main character.
Usually you don't get to play as an anti-hero.
Yeah.
In these types of games. And that's the story benefits from, and the themes benefit from playing as an anti-hero.
Yeah.
But I think what also helps is that Velvet's quest for revenge is ultimately self-defeating because of the third act twist. And then she basically goes insane trying to figure out what to do with that reveal. And then the conclusion she ultimately comes to ends up actually being clever. The way that she deals with the whole, well, if I get my revenge, it would ultimately be pointless. Because that's another parallel between them, is that the person you thought was dead is actually still alive in a way.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The part where Luffy said, like, told Velva to get her shit together was the best part in that game.
That little cinnamon roll.
Yeah.
So, King,
you should play Tales of Berseria. That's a very good game.
It's on my Captain America pocketbook list.
You met with Anthony Mackie while on your jogging route. And yeah. He said to play Tales of Berseria, and then you wrote it down.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was Xenoblade 1. Xenoblade 2, I liked more. I just really like cutesy high fantasy settings, and that's really much more of what
mm-hmm.
like the setting of Xenoblade 1 is definitely interesting, the most creative and original of the three, like you're on these giant titans.
And actually the design of that world visually and how it all connects and how the journey starts from like the bottom of the Bionis, and it's probably one of the most unique parts of the game and one of my favorite parts of it is how the yeah. world is constructed, especially compared to like 2 and 3, although 3 I think has like a interesting thing going on as well.
You go in a big old circle.
Yeah, it's like what TGX said about Simpsons Hit and Run. Giant circle. But that's thematically appropriate because it's shaped like an Ouroboros.
Yes, yeah. The embodiment of good and
evil.
You
end your journey at the beginning.
Yeah, because I suppose it does the palace where you find Queen Nia's near the beginning of the game, technically.
Yes, and if you keep going from there, you never are forced to do this, but if you keep going, you can drop down into the place where you started the game.
Yeah, so that's kind of neat. So I do want to give the first game credit for that, but personally, I just think like this, the cloud setting and all the little titans that all have their own little cultures and stuff. I was more into that. As you know, I have famously bad taste, and one of my favorite anime is Fairy Tail.
Mm-hmm.
And tonally and spiritually, Xenoblade 2 reminds me a lot of Fairy Tale.
It is very shonen-esque.
Yeah, it is more explicitly anime-inspired than the first one, which felt, for lack of a better word, more Western. I don't know really a good way to put that, but I liked the kind of the happy-go-lucky tone of the second one more. I liked the characters more. I was more interested in all of them. And like Fairy Tail, I can get serious and take the more emotional moments and give them like the dramatic weight that they deserve. Like the bottom of the second act moment in Xenoblade 2, it's not as good as the one in 3, but it comes pretty close, where like you suffer a total and utter defeat and you're just like, damn, where are we going to go from here? Yeah, I found the claims about sexualization somewhat exaggerated, because, you know, it's easy to look at Pyra's character design and complain about boobs and cleavage, but when I was actually playing the game, I wasn't really thinking about that at all. I mean, like, I thought, like you said, the gameplay is more difficult to grasp, specifically the battling, because the idea is you do like those arts, those elemental arts, to build up spheres, and then you use chain attacks to pop the spheres and do mega damage. And that's kind of like, I guess, the structure of every battle, specifically the boss battles.
Yeah.
And it takes a while to grasp that. But once I did, it made the boss battles a lot more interesting than the first game, because it didn't do much to help with a lot of the more basic enemies, because it's like the whole popping spear thing is fun when you've got a long-term boss battle to focus on, but not so much when you're fighting trash mobs. And I did think it was kind of weird that they downgraded to only having 3 arts to choose from instead of like 9 or whatever it was in the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not play X, by the way, so I don't have any background on that. I think that has the same art system as the first one from what I've seen.
Fun thing you can do in Xenoblade 2 is if you use Mithra and you give yourself arts recharge, I think it's the dessert pouch category.
Mm-hmm.
If you give yourself ridiculous arts recharge and level up Mithra and give her certain aux scores, you can, when you crit, which is basically guaranteed on Mithra, it will fully recharge an art, which means when you're playing as Mithra with a certain build, you can tap an art and it will instantly recharge, and you can literally spam your arts infinitely, which is hilarious.
Yeah,
and that's what I use to deal with normal enemies.
Okay. And see, the thing is, like, I like to think I'm not a total dumbass, you know, but part of the reason why RPGs historically haven't been my favorite genre is that I just have a hard time understanding game systems, complicated systems.
You can't blame yourself with Xenoblade 2, because Xenoblade 2 just does not do a good job, really, explaining a lot of its systems very well.
Yeah.
Actually, there are some tutorials that have been shown to give you incorrect information. There are a few at the beginning, which is hilarious.
I mean, really, the only thing I straight up hated in Xenoblade 2 were the field skill checks, where you're just not allowed to continue. Because, like, I did have to go back and grind for some of that shit, I'm not going to lie. And that really destroyed the pacing for no real benefit, because, like, refresh my memory, do any of those field skills, like, actually benefit you in any way besides the checks?
Pretty much the ones that exist. There are some that exist for, like, gathering points or whatever, to, like, gather items. And there are some that I guess exist to do stuff like that. But for the most part, it's just to, like, unblock a wall or something.
Yeah. And that was the shit I didn't like.
Yeah.
Because a lot of it was, I want to say all the skills, you get points from doing different things. It wasn't.
Yes, they're like, it's kind of like an achievement system, sort of.
Yeah.
Except you get skills from it.
So it's like there are some skills that you could only get points for by like scavenging, I think, was one of them.
Yeah.
I don't know. So like it's not something you can fix by grinding enemies is the point necessarily.
Yeah.
Depending on the skill. So
sometimes you don't even really have a blade with those skills.
Yeah. So then you have to go get one.
Which I think that the gacha system, I don't even mind until it comes to field skills. Because, I mean, you don't pay any real money to use the damn thing. So really, for me, it's just kind of like, oh, you get like a, maybe this playthrough, I'll roll with this blade because I got this one now. But the problem is when there's field skill checks, it just becomes annoying because sometimes you're not going to have the field skill that's needed.
Mm-hmm.
To be fair, the ones that are required, I think that you will always have, like your story blades will always have those skills. You just need to level them up. But when you're like exploring, there are a lot of field skill checks that are for optional side stuff while you're exploring. And that is the most aggravating part of field skill checks.
Yeah. I thought the side quests in the second game were more interesting. They had more of a structure to them. Because in the first game, it's usually like, find me 5 dingleberries or kill 5 copybaras. That's like most of the side quests in Xenoblade 1. And then Xenoblade 2, like you have stuff like, that side quest for that elderly driver who's being taken care of by his blade, who hasn't aged at all. You know, like, there's more of a story going on in these side quests. And speaking of blades, I thought some of the mythology they built up for them was really interesting. Just this idea that Brigid keeps, like, a journal so she can remember the events of her past lives, you know. And how part of June's turn was him discovering a journal from one of his past lives and reading it through that. His name is Gene, or Jin.
Yep, third time's a charm, Jin.
Apparently in Japanese, his name is Sheen.
Sheen?
Yeah, S-H-I-N, Sheen. Not Ultra Lord Sheen, but, you know, like Gain Sheen. So they changed it to a different Japanese name and then pronounced it incorrectly in the English.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is that Pyra and Mithra, in Japanese, it's Mithra's light, which I think is like Hikari or something.
Okay.
Hikari. So they changed a lot of the names around when they localized it.
And speaking of which, the one thing I do appreciate about these games is, as much as I love my stable of Funimation actors that I'm all familiar with and be like, I know which actor that guy is, it is refreshing to play these games and have no idea who any of the actors are and just appreciate their performances, you know? So I think for the most part, everybody in these games is pretty well acted. I'm trying to remember if there's some stuff with Rex or whatever he's screaming and he's like, Pyra!
He can't scream very well.
Also, I just think everyone, all the people from Torna just sound awful. All of them.
Wow.
Yeah, no.
Way to punch down and work in actors, man.
Last time on Unversecast.
Yeah, all I'm going to say is at least Roger Craig Smith can act. But moving on, let's talk about the controls.
I think Roger Craig Smith can act as well.
Yes.
Yeah, Roger Craig Smith is a great actor, but also so is Jason.
No.
Listen,
What about Jin?
Jin?
Because he's technically from Torna.
I don't have anything to say about Jin.
But I know you famously don't like Malos.
I thought Malos was really bad.
Which no I can never agree with.
No disrespect towards the actor. It's literally like his
Voice acting. Okay.
Yeah. His act. I got no beef against the actor, you know. But his acting in that game is literally just screaming.
Well, see,
not always.
I love his actor. The way that he's acted in Xenoblade 2 is like he's walking the line between ham and like every time he says something, it's just I'm not necessarily even laughing at him. It's just he's having such a good time.
Yeah,
I don't know. I love it.
Yeah, I thought, Ryan, you were saying that you didn't like Malos as a character, and I was going to.
I didn't love him,
which is fair. But if you'd straight up hated him, then we'd have a on our hands. Yeah. No, I thought he was great. I thought for his performance and just as a character, he was just kind of like this spirit of misanthropy who just wanted to see the world burn because that's just what he believed his destiny was, because that was kind of how he was influenced by being awoken by Amalthus.
Yeah.
Who was also an interesting character. I liked the
Amalthus is like a meme. I don't even know. He's just the way, not that he's a bad character, but he's just, every time I see him, I laugh. I don't know why. He's just so evil.
Because he's just like a little blue elf, man.
Hey, he like literally, there's a scene where he kills a baby.
Yes.
Like which is
God. I forgot about that. I don't know how, because it's a baby being murdered, but I forgot about that.
It's just like, I don't know. And it's funny because when I first played the game, I mean, when I first met him, I'm like, okay, so this dude's evil. But the way that they spin him, you almost like doubt it for a little while because you're like, well, I don't know. He doesn't seem like he's doing too many evil things, I guess. Like, how bad could he be? And then you get to like the scene where he kills the baby and you're like, oh, okay. Well, I guess he is a bad guy.
That's the most evil thing he can possibly do short of genocide. Yeah. I really liked the ending too.
Yeah.
Specifically, there is a scene towards the end where you meet a certain character that has been shrouded in mystery and built up to for the whole game. Oh, I love Zeke, by the way. He's hilarious.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Zeke's great.
Our dog is named Zeke, by the way.
Is he named after him, or is it just a coincidence?
Nope. Named after him.
Oh, my God.
You guys want to see a picture of our boy?
Can I put him up on the podcast?
Yeah. Yeah, you can do that. But go on. I have to dig for the picture, so.
Yeah, so you get to the conversation with this mystery character who's been built up to, And the scene really reminds me of the ending of Dream Drop Distance or Young Xehanort. Yeah. By the way, Young Xehanort looks exactly like Alvis. So at first I thought, oh God, it's Young Xehanort. He's in this game too. But it turned out to be a different character. But like, you know, Young Xehanort's going on and on and on about how future Ansem, Seeker of Darkness, went back in time and gave him time travel powers. And here's how time travel works. So it's like, this makes the plot less satisfying, and I have no idea what the fuck is going
on. Why are we talking about Kingdom Hearts now? Talk about Xenoblade 2.
And the reason I bring it up is because the scene with the architect reminded me of that, except it actually improved the story in a significant way. I thought it recontextualized this world that seems like Happy Cloud Kingdom type archetype place, and like, oh, that's actually kind of neat and clever. And the character himself was kind of interesting, like how after a certain point he decided to go hands off and just let things go the way they go, let mankind choose its own destiny, essentially. So I enjoyed that.
And then they did.
Yep.
They certainly chose a destiny.
See, the thing is, I thought the ending of 2 was the Bionis combining with, what the hell is the setting of the second game called?
I almost said Mira, but that's Xenoblade X. I don't know. I don't remember.
I thought it was the worlds of the first and second game combining, but apparently that's not what it was. It was just the Titans turning into a landmass. Yeah,
the Titans just come together to make a new landmass.
Yeah.
Which is, I guess the point of it is that now their resources won't run out because the Titans aren't going to die. They just made a new landmass.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I loved the characters. I loved the tone. I thought the emotional moments worked better. There was a part where I almost cried near the beginning, honestly, when Azurda dies, quote unquote, and then I laughed. So,
yeah,
like all that stuff worked for me. So I kind of loved it, even though there are parts of it that I kind of hated. So, and then 3 is almost too big to get into and just a little footnote in this podcast, because that game is heavy. But
yeah,
I thought it was good.
We also talked about it on our 2022 wrap up.
Yeah, but at that point I hadn't played it, so I had no idea what you guys were talking about. And the thing is, the word Ouroboros has been completely ruined for me by Mega Man X6. You know the level, Blaze Heatnix level with all the donuts?
With the giant donut.
Yeah, the giant donuts are supposed to be Ouroboroses. And to me, that just seems like the most pretentious, stupid thing that they could have possibly put in one of these Mega Man games. And it's completely ruined the Ouroboros for me.
But even it's the embodiment of the eternal conflict between good and evil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's also a giant donut robot that shoots orbs at you. You know, it's stupid.
You know, Ionios is a giant donut, at least at the point at which Xenoblade 3 takes place.
Yes.
Which is funny.
I think at first I was kind of, I'll try to keep this brief, but at first when I heard that Xenoblade 3 was deliberately like a crossover between the first two games, I was like, great, I want to see Shulk team up with Rex. That's what I wanted to see.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not what the game is. Apparently the DLC that they released, Future Redeemed, is that.
Yeah, that is basically what the DLC is, yes.
But I think after a while I grew to like these Ouroboros kids. And the romance between Mio and Noah was cute because Mio was adorable. The side quests were better. I liked that they were kind of like a way to recruit new party members and get new classes and stuff. And there was like a complete story arc for each of them.
Yeah.
In a way there wasn't for the side quests in any of the previous games. So that was fun. I enjoyed the ways that the two worlds from the first two games kind of combine and recontextualize, and this game was kind of neat. Like, there was a point where I was wandering around the desert area where I realized the music playing in the background was from the Machina Village in the first game. And I was like, you know, it's fun. It's like a way of little bits fan service that aren't distracting, you know?
Yeah, that's, I think the thing about 3 is, before it came out, I was afraid that it would be too fan servicey because I don't know. I don't like being pandered to necessarily.
Yes.
So what they basically did is they stuck all that shit into the DLC story so that they could tell their own story with 3 with elements from, I mean, it is a world built on the backs of 1 and 2, but with an entirely new cast. So it's like fine.
Yeah.
And because of that, I think it was able to tell the story that it wanted to tell. Excellently.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad that they took the route that they did in that regard.
Yeah. And I don't know, it's almost kind of difficult to talk about this game because like it's so dark and depressing in so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so emotionally fraught. And honestly, it's been almost a year since I played it, and I'm starting to lose my memory of certain things. And I don't know, like, I thought the gameplay was better than the first one. I really liked the chain attacks in this game. They felt good, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't have any huge systems analyses that I can give you on that. I just enjoyed doing them. I guess if I have any criticisms, I thought the game peaked early.
Mm.
There's a moment where you suffer a complete and utter defeat, and it just seems like everything is completely hopeless. And that's kind of like the emotional peak of the game, in my opinion. And there's a part where a child shows up, and I thought it was the godchild from Mass Effect 3 coming to send you back in time or something. Thank God that's not what was happening, because the twist they did was actually really clever, and I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of like, after that point, it feels like they needed to go straight to Origin. But instead, you do a bunch of other stuff for a couple hours, and then you go to Origin. And
mm-hmm.
that includes the worst part of the game, in my opinion, when they are playing off-seer tunes, and that somehow makes the resurrected soldiers regain control of themselves. That seemed kind of dumb. I liked seeing Nia again. She looks really pretty in her queen outfit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, the music was great. It looks nice for a Switch game. Like, I think they had like DLSS scaling, and it looked really clean. Because, like, as much as I like Xenoblade 2, that game looks kind of blurry on Switch because they used like standard bilinear filtering or something. And whereas Xenoblade 3 is also dynamic res, but it uses DLSS and it looks a lot better.
Yeah.
I know the game is good. I think that if it ended a couple of hours earlier, if you cut out the winter area and just kept the Queen's Fortress, her little invisible castle thing, I don't know. It feels like you were riding an emotional high from the Agnes Castle part of the game, and you're kind of just ready to go to the final boss, but then there's some stuff you got to get through first before
you can
get there.
I hear that all the time, but I was ready to take a fucking emotional break. It's like, holy shit.
Yeah, I guess I could see that. I don't know. That's just how I felt about it. The game's good. Personally, 2 is just more my kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that it's probably my personal favorite of the three. But Xenoblade 3, I definitely see why you and pretty much everybody else seem to think that's the best one. Wow, that was kind of a condescending way to put it. I'm sorry.
I mean, I didn't take it that way, but it is interesting.
I totally get it. I know what you guys see in it. Like, it's emotionally and thematically, it is heavy and I guess cathartic, and it's really dark. And you can argue the gameplay is the best as well, and the world design as well. So like, I totally know what you guys see in it.
I will argue that.
So it's just
now, Xenoblade fans, this is how you have a healthy discussion. Take note.
Yeah.
With that said, you're completely wrong. And I hate you.
I think you are both degenerates because clearly the greatest Xenoblade game ever made was Xenoblade Chronicles X for the Nintendo Wii U.
I've heard nothing but apathy towards that game from the Xenoblade fan base.
I remember liking it. It's been years since I played it, though. Music's
I did know
really
one
good.
Person. He was the lead programmer for my game team, or the director. Xenoblade X was his favorite game.
Oh, wow.
That's kind of it in terms of people I know who even discussed that game, even a little bit. But yeah, that was a long-winded discussion about the Xenoblade trilogy, and I'll hand it over to you guys to actually talk about something that came out this year. Please check out our YouTube channel for playthroughs of our favorite games and video versions of all our podcasts. This episode was edited by yours truly, Exoparadigm Gamer. Check out the links in the description to follow each of us on YouTube, Twitter, and more. Thank you all very much for watching our podcast, and we'll see you all next time.